Hello, hello. Thank you so much for joining me for another episode of the Prophets and Prana podcast. Today I am talking with Dee Dones. She is an environmentalist and Agnihotra meditation coach. She is a holistic wellness teacher and she's also a publicist. Today's episode is one of the most interesting episodes I have done to date, and I can't wait for you to tune in because we're going to be talking more about spirituality and a little bit less about business. And I think that's something that we really need to be bringing into the forefront every now and then, just so we can maintain our balance. Without any further ado, we're going to get right into the interview. Thank you so much for joining me on this episode of Prophets and Prana. This is a beautiful afternoon to do a podcast.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes.
So would you like to tell the audience a little bit more about yourself than what they heard in the intro?
Yes, my name is Dee Dones, and I run a public relations firm called Dee Dones Public Relations and Talent Management. And I also am an Agnihotra meditation teacher, and I'm also an environmentalist.
So that's a really interesting balance you've got going on, really interesting mix of interests.
Oh, yes, yes. But, you know, it's all the same. You know, if you care about the environment, then you should be caring about people because people live in the environment. You can't separate the two.
That is so true, although we try. So there's a lot of environmental movements who do try to separate us all. So you also are into Ayurveda, correct?
That's right. Agnihotra is an Ayurvedic meditation, and it's not attached to any spiritual system or religion. It is done with fire and cow dung and rice, and it actually has been scientifically proven to reverse pollution and to heal people. I mean, they have numerous studies talking about the benefits of Agnihotra in the environmental realm.
Oh, how interesting. So you're going to have to enlighten me. I know nothing about this form of meditation, like nothing. And also, if we could touch on how your meditation practice influences your business, I would be deeply, deeply interested in that as well.
Oh, awesome. Well, I've been an Agnihotra practitioner for about a year, and I come from a lineage of 150 years with the gurus that have, you know, passed through the ages, and it's just a wonderful practice. You do it exactly at sunrise and also at sunset. So I do this 6 days a week, and then you make the offering of rice with ghee, and you know, you're making this fire with this cow dung, and you say a Sanskrit mantra at the exact time of sunset or sunrise. And it's just wonderful. All the things in my backyard have grown like crazy because a lot of people use the ash from the meditation to help with growing plants. And it's just really good. And plus the animals, I mean, sometimes squirrels and deer, they'll walk nearer to where I am outside when I do this. And they're very receptive to this meditation too. And another thing that I love about Agnihotra meditation is that it helps to heal people. I've had people that have healed goiter issues and thyroid issues and issues with their joints and knees and things like that. And it's also great, too, just for calming and balancing your mind. It's a very therapeutic meditation on all levels.
Wow. It sounds kind of complicated, though. And do you need to have, you know, specific measurements and do you need to make sure everything is just so, or can you be a little more relaxed with it?
Well, I mean, the exact thing that you have to do is it has to be exactly at sunrise and at sunset. So there's an app that I have on my phone that measures that exactly, or there's a sheet that you can download that deals with the atomic time. But other than that, you know, as long as you have cow dung from a cow that has not been artificially inseminated. And usually I get all my cow dung from my teacher, Sri Charles, in Tuskegee, Alabama, because, you know, those cows eat grass, you know, they've been treated very well. And, you know, especially since some people ingest the ash, you know, I send this to people that are sick. So, you know, it's good to know where, you know, the cow dung is coming from. And then you use a copper inverted pyramid, and you use all, you know, like a copper spoon and a copper tray to do the item. So it is precise, but once you get it in the habit of doing it, it's like second nature.
And how is it a meditative practice? So is that in the mantra?
Yeah, the mantra, like I said, it's in Sanskrit. So, you don't do a literal translation of Sanskrit. It basically, there are different ways of saying God and your offering. So, since it's not attached to any type of spiritual system, you can add this to your own meditation practice, which is what I do. It takes about 15 minutes to, to light the fire, and once it goes out, then you can leave from the meditation area in front of your pyramid. But I just found that it's deepened already the meditation practice that I already had developed before I started doing Ajna Hotra.
And how have you found it to influence your business? Because you've mentioned that you're doing it 6 days a week, so I'm assuming you're doing it on days that you also work. And have you found that you're more present in your work later, or maybe more focused, or are you less confined by rigid structures than you might have been otherwise?
Well, I found that I do adjust my schedule, my work schedule around the times. I don't like to miss Ajna Hotra because it does make for an easier work day. Public relations is very, very, it's fast paced. It can be very stressful. And I find this keeps me balanced. And also, too, I found, too, that me just doing the meditation, it helps me to make sure that I hone in on getting clients that are not going to be stressful for me. I'm very, very particular about the type of clients that I take. And, I do make sure that I get my work done. But say, for instance, there's several people that live near me that do Ajna Hotra. So you don't necessarily have to do it yourself every single day. If you're in, the presence of them doing it, then that can work fine too, but I try not to miss a day. Like I said, it's about 6, 7 days a week, and I think the only time I miss it is Sunday when I do go to a spiritual center to practice with some other people, and I may miss it on that day. But I find that once I establish the practice, then I don't have to work as hard because of the discipline, and it helped really keep me focused on the type of people I wanted to be around me doing business, especially in public relations, because you can get some pretty clients that are very difficult to work with, let's just say it like that, and you want to get with people that you really believe in their message, and their message is positive. And sometimes it's hard to do. People are hiring public relation specialists and publicists so they can make them look good. So sometimes people have projects that are not as desirable or, worthwhile. So I keep away from that. And then, I'll even tell them, I said, hey, I meditate, sunrise and sunset. So let's try to keep it, to email during those times. If it's an emergency, of course, call me. But I let them know that I'm doing this because it helps. It actually benefits them and me doing the work for them.
So, have you found clients who are resistant to your meditation practice, or they're not respectful of that boundary?
They typically are because of the results that I produce. I mean, I've placed clients in Essence Magazine and Forbes and things like that. So they don't really think of it as something deterring from them getting results. And plus, I'm very peaceful. I don't argue. If there's any type of issue, I'll tell them. I said, listen, I'm not going to argue with you. If there's an issue, I mean, even if say someone owed me a lot of money, and then I was doing them a favor, and they says, well, I'm not paying you. I said, okay, fine. I said, if you want to do that, then just go right ahead, and you'll have your karma come back to you. And they were shocked that I was just, I really meant that. I never forget when I gave them the discount because they were having some problems with their children and all kind of stuff. I said, listen, I'm not going to even put this in writing. I said, we'll keep the existing contract. I said, but if you, if for some reason, you don't want to adhere to what we're verbally saying here, I said, I'm not going to worry about it because I'm doing this giving of myself because you're telling me about your problems. And sure enough, they say, oh, I'm not paying this. And then later on, they really needed a favor and they really needed it from me, but they couldn't ask me. And I heard about all kind of bad things that were happening to them business wise. And I didn't really wish it upon them, but I already knew because of that energy that they were developing there, it wasn't anything good was going to happen. And in a publicity world, it's a very small world. Everybody knows everybody.
Yes.
They quickly realized, like, uh-oh, I made a mistake in, you know, not doing the right thing. And, you know, I didn't argue anything. I just said, great, I'm not going to even try to get the money. And I said, God bless you and all of that. And I really meant it.
So I think that some people are really unaware of how what they do in business will come back to them. Saying we think that each interaction is like this little closed loop, and it's not. And there are ripple effects that we create with our actions, and so often people, they forget that, and you know, maybe they don't pay their bill, or maybe they continually don't show up for their meetings, or maybe they just aren't fully present, which is another problem that will cause ripple effects in their business. So have you had to coach some of your clients on that concept? So I know that a lot of people don't really understand how we affect the world around us.
Well, I've had some meditation students where I've talked about this, and it's not about vilifying someone when they make a mistake, but say, for instance, in business, I was always told from an old mentor of mine that was a multimillionaire. He says, contracts are great. He says, but if you have to do business by making someone sign a contract, you shouldn't do business with them. And by that, he was meaning that if you can't trust someone unless they sign a contract, then how are you going to trust them on anything else? And I found that pretty much works everything in life. If I have to make you do something, whether you're my friend or a business client, then what does that say about your character? So I always tell people, you know, you don't have to be perfect, but think about what you say, what you do, how that affects someone. So for my business and just life in general, I want to have someone better off than before they met me. And I would tell clients, I said, you know, PR is very lucrative for me, and I've been in PR in marketing for about, oh my gosh, 15 years. But, you know, for the last 10 years of my life, it's not been all about the money. It's been about how can I bring value to someone? How can I, you know, have someone thinking outside the box? Because, for instance, you know, I'll tell people, they're signing up. I had a couple of reality TV show clients. And I said, listen, you have to think about what's going to happen a year, two, 3 years from now. Your show may not be popular. You need to have some other business. Maybe you can have a fashion line. Maybe you can write a book. Maybe you can do speaking engagements. So you're paying me for this, but let's think about this because you have children. What if this is not going to be your continual career? So let me show you things that maybe another publicist wouldn't tell you about other things so you can make money, whether you continue to hire me or not. And that's how I think, because, you know, people, they want to be happy. And sometimes with reality TV specifically, they may not be happy after the results of being on TV and everything's being so exposed. So I kind of want to say, listen, you do this, but let's come up with your plan A, B, C, D, E, F, and G. So that way, if things don't go, you know, well, you have these other streams of income.
And I think a lot of people get really focused on their passion, and then that's what they're going to do for their career. And they get so focused that they don't even want to consider the possibility that, you know what, this might not work out. And, you know, not for lack of trying, but it may not work out for whatever reason. And I sometimes feel like with my own clients that resistance to thinking of the possibility is like wishing for failure. And so they don't even want to put that energy into the universe.
Uh-huh.
So they're going to stay focused on this one path because they are so purpose-driven and so passionate about what it is that they want to do. And I feel that sometimes it can be quite detrimental to be so focused that you aren't willing to go with the flow and to accept, you know, this may not work out. So let's have a backup plan. And, mm-hmm. you know, fashion lines, books, speaking, those are all other ways that one can monetize while also being purposeful and doing something that they are passionate about. So it may not be coming out into the world in a way that you wish it would, but it's still coming out into the world.
Yes, yes. Now, I think that's really good. And I do think, like, and it's true, I think if you do have this purpose, people do, some people do think that if they think about a plan B, C, D, E, F, G, that they're basically setting themselves up with failure. But I like to think of it as coming up with extra things that feed off of your main passion. So it's not setting up at all. And it's actually being smart, especially if you have children or parents you're supporting. That's, you know, that's, I think it's very necessary to do that.
Now, on the topic of setting up a backup plan, not everybody is going to be a good writer or to have ideas for fashion or to be comfortable speaking in public. So have you found resistance among your clients when you put those ideas out there?
Well, it depends. So sometimes people, they want to do some of those things, but they're not quite up to par. And so I do media training and training on public speaking and things like that. And some people may not be good at writing. And I help them develop books and things like that, too, because I'm also a writer. But for the people that are resistant to really diversifying, I would try to say, let's find the one thing that really resonates with you, because it's easier to do something that resonates with you. So if none of those things resonate, then I try to find something else that is a passion for them. And there's sometimes when I say to them, you know what you hired me for doesn't seem like it's your passion after talking to you. And because what I do is people fill out a very detailed assessment form, and then I talk to them. You know, what are your personal interests? You know, what do you do before you were doing this, or, you know, this project and things like that. And sometimes I find that they are just doing this new business because they think it's going to make them a lot of money quick. And I said, well, you know, especially when you're doing things with the public, you know, they're viewing you, you're not going to come across as sincere. I would highly suggest you switch careers or businesses. And people say, what? You're kidding. And of course, you know, sometimes you may just be on a 3-month retainer. Just, I mean, you know, you're talking yourself out of, a longer term contract. I said, well, I want you to be happy. This is not about me making a lot of money for 6 months or 8 months, but it's about you realizing your happiness. And if I can help you get to that point, then so be it. So you'd be surprised how many people say, well, I never thought about doing that because it's not a lot of money in that. And I'm going, but you know, you talked about it for 10 minutes. It seems like you're very passionate about it. I think you need to work on that. And then we can have maybe what we're working on now as your side thing. But let's work on that right there as your primary thing, because that's your passion that brings you happiness. You can just hear them smiling over the phone. So you have to do that. That makes your heart leap.
I couldn't agree more with you on that. I find, at least in my experience, I've done jobs that I can do and that I can do well, and it's not my passion. And so I get up and I go to work and I'm like, oh, I just sort of want to kill myself today. And that's the only way to live. And it's not enough, I think, for a lot of people to just do something that they're good at. It has to be something that they're passionate about. And I like that you are promoting that with your clients, you know, something that makes your heart leap. But it can be kind of hard to find that, and it can be hard to come over the resistance of, well, if I do that for money, I'm not going to like it anymore.
Yes.
So, do you have any secrets for helping people cope with that?
Well, that's where kind of the coaching comes in with people. And I think for me, you know, since I'm not so worried about money, and a lot of times I've guided people where they're not a longer term client, but guess what? They refer people to me because I care about them. I'm not making this about, oh, okay, well, when's the next retainer going to be paid? And so I tell people, I said, once you put out that energy where you really are doing your passion and you're really, you know, sincere about it, I said, all sorts of things will come to you. And it's so true. I mean, just like you know, you asked me earlier, how do I do my business, you know, around Agnihotra? But once I've set that intention and I'm doing it, things just opened up. It wasn't a problem. And it's the same with anyone else. You don't have to separate how you do your business, from how you do your spiritual personal development, to, you know, here in the Western society, everything's supposed to be separate. But if you set your intention for spiritual development, and that is your life, it doesn't have to be separate. And that's the same thing with, you know, with people. You know, you do what really is in your heart, and all sorts of things will come to you. I mean, I know that because I'm a recipient of all, you know, that type of thinking, you know, all the benefits from that.
We really do treat things as if we can't just have a spiritual life. It's like, okay, well, my spiritual practice is over here, and then here's everything else that's going on. And I think that people don't realize that, you know, your marriage can be a spiritual practice, your business can be a spiritual practice. And when you stop thinking of things as being separate, I think you're more likely to find the good, the God, the universe, whatever yes. you want to call it, in those moments where you may not otherwise see them. And I think it can really help change your perspective and maybe even make you more present and open to accepting and receiving everything that the universe is offering.
Oh, yes, most definitely. I think the Dalai Lama even talked about this. He says he thinks that if children, you know, in a society were raised up doing meditation, you won't have so many mental illness facilities, because then your mind is trained to go inward as opposed to being attached to a car, a house, and all these material possessions. And so I guess for me, because I gave away a lot of material things, because I was one of those type of people, was the you know, the business person that drove the fancy Mercedes and had all this stuff. And, you know, I wouldn't even deal with you unless you could refer me to a good client that was paying well. I've just found that, you know, I got stagnated in my growth. And so I gave a lot of things away. And once I did that, I was like, well, heck, what's really important? And I said, oh, the people. People are really important. And it just transformed how I did business. It enriched all my personal relationships, my relationship with my daughter and my brother and my father. It really enriched how I dealt with clients. And clients will often tell me, you know, you don't act like a regular publicist. You're telling me stuff that no one really tells me. And, you know, I'll talk about their personal goals. I'll talk about, oh, you know, they're worried about their children's college education or whatever it is, or they're worried they don't have a retirement account because they put so much money into their business. So I talk to them about personal things, and I care about what they, you know, they feel. So it does make a difference. And, you know, for publicists, well, me personally, I can say I don't do any advertisement. So this is like the best word of mouth advertisement, just being nice and kind and compassionate to people.
Yeah, it comes back to you. So, yes. And people hear, it's like, oh, she knows what she's doing and she's nice to work with. I mean, I think it's a lot easier for people to be nice in business. At least it's becoming that way. I know that wasn't always the case, but I think with this surge of people being aware and being open and not being afraid to be vulnerable, I think it's becoming a lot easier for those of us who are authentic to do well in business.
Yes, and I think that there's a growing trend of businesses. I mean, I know that I've seen on Twitter alone, you know, groups of what they call conscious you know, businesses, or what, I forget the other terminology, but I think there are a lot of businesses that want to be socially responsible, is the term.
Yes.
So I think that, you know, this is good that you have more businesses that care about the products that they make, the services that they provide, that in relation to dealing with people, the environment, because you really are not separated. We are connected to everyone. And so as soon as you hear about things that separate people, you really are not. So whether you live on this part of the world or a different part of the world, it is your responsibility to have the clients happy and productive and, you know, and prosperous, because then they're, you know, they're continuing with their prosperity. Someone's benefiting that, whether it be them going to the grocery store or traveling or hiring new people. So to me, it's a duty that I'm able to have people to flourish that way so that they can be a blessing to other people.
I think a lot of people don't realize that they have the power to be blessing to someone else. So it's more than just your family or your spouse. So you can be a blessing to other people in the world, and it doesn't take anything away from you to do so.
Oh, most definitely. And I found that the more I give, the more I receive. You know, I was talking to somebody actually the other day. I said, you know, they said, well, why are you giving this complimentary meditation? You know, I take donations or whatever. I said, well, because it's a gift to the community. I really feel that, you know, when people come for meditation and for, you know, spiritual guidance, then great, let me give this gift. And nothing is truly ever free anyway. You have to invest in your discipline, whether it be your spiritual discipline or your business discipline. So, you know, there have been times where, you know, a meditation student refers me to a client. They may give me something, some beautiful clothing, some jewelry, or comp tickets or something. So that's their appreciation. So whatever resources you have, it's the give and take. So I never see if it is, oh yeah, this is free meditation. It's me having my gift shared with the community. That's the way that I see it.
I think that's so beautifully put. And as long as I have you, and we're a little more than the halfway mark, so I want to touch on some business things as okay. well. So how have you found people that you work with who are more soulful and purpose-driven respond to the idea of putting themselves out there? Because I know that's something a lot of us in this industry really struggle with from time to time. So it is a vulnerable experience. And there's always, I think, this little fear, but what if I put myself out there and nobody likes what I have to offer?
Well, I think just like in anything, you have a niche. So somebody will resonate with what you have to offer. I think, you know, even if you have to have a couple of side businesses plus your main business, you do that. And just explore, because life is meant for you to explore many different things. You don't have to be stuck in one thing. And we talked about before about people that may not want to write books or have a clothing line. The same thing goes for a business owner. As an entrepreneur, you have to be expansive. So, you know, just stick to your niche, and then people will find you. I mean, at least for me, I know that's the case. You know, my main business is public relations, and I started a health blog several years ago because people were always asking me questions about health and wellness and things like that. So that became a subspecialty of my main business, because health brands were finding me and saying, hey, can you talk about our products and stuff? So just because, I was doing one business, you know, my hobby, so to speak, became part of the business. So you can do things like that all the time. I think that it always, works best that whatever your business interests are, that's great. But especially in the day of social media, you need to, you know, talk about your, you know, the things that are passionate about you in your personal life, because you never know when that can be monetized, which that's been the case for me.
Same here. So in my business, Reach Yogi started out as a complete hobby. So I just liked yoga and I wanted to talk about yoga. And all of a sudden I'm like, oh, this can be monetized. But if I didn't put it out there, I never would have realized that. And also, I think you need to be open to the possibility of something being able to turn into a business, instead of just, well, it's just a hobby and that's all it is, and being really rigid in that belief, because things can grow and evolve, and never more quickly than now. We have all of these tools at our disposal, and I think we are becoming so much more connected that we can turn our hobbies into businesses if we want to, and we can get the knowledge and the connections to help us do so in a relatively short amount of time compared to the way business used to have to be structured.
Yes, that's very, very true. I think, you know, it's important for people that do have a hobby that they want to turn into a business, that they need to have a real business plan. Because sometimes, and you've seen this, I'm sure, people have these blogs or these Pinterest accounts or Instagram accounts, and you can tell it's a hobby, but then there are people that treat their hobbies, you can just see that wow, they could be way up here making money. And a good example of that is a friend of mine that was on a Food Network show, the All Stars. She always had beautiful pictures of her cooking these vegan, vegetarian, gourmet dishes in her kitchen and all these beautiful plated, you know, food creations and all of that. And they scattered her out through her Instagram page and her Facebook. And so she was able to get on the show because she treated her hobby like a business. And so at that point, she did not have a business plan. But once they approached her, she gathered a lot of her friends, PR marketing friends. Well, let me get a business plan together. You know, I don't know what's going to happen on this show, but, you know, heck, you know, this is wonderful. So I think, you know, if you are on that level where it looks professional, you know, go ahead and hire a professional if you don't have access to a PR or marketing person to see how to, you know, really get your business up on the business level. She was already doing that without a business plan. So I said, you know, in her case, she was already on that path of really knowing about food and nutrition. And her niche is just, you know, having vegetarian food, gourmet and elegant. I was like, oh my gosh. I said, I want to eat at your house every day. But that was her passion. And that's what she does for a full-time living now because of the hobby turning into something professional.
And it's because she wasn't afraid to put herself out there.
Exactly.
So many times, I think this might be especially hard for introverts. Well, what if I do this, I put this out there, and nobody is interested or nobody likes me or people just, they don't think that I'm doing it well or they think I'm stupid. And then you are limiting yourself. And clearly she didn't do that. She put herself out there and she created this whole business for herself, which I think is something a lot of people dream of, but are just a little bit reserved when it comes to taking that step. So do you have any suggestions for people who are a little bit afraid of putting themselves out there about how to do so with confidence and without being paralyzed by the fear that someone may not like what you're doing?
Well, you can do what some people do. They have a separate blog or website different from their main business or whatever, and maybe, you know, have something totally different, and they brand it so it's not associated with them, the individual. Mm-hmm. Or their other company. So that way you can kind of test it. And really, I think I read, was it on Seth's blog where he talked about you only need 1% of people that you connect with to make you a successful business. So let's say 1,000 people are exposed to what you're doing. You only need 1% to really support you because that 1% will refer other people to you. So it's not something where you have to be scared. If you don't want to do it with your own name, just do it anonymously. I mean, and you just would be surprised. I think even who is it, the horror writer that writes about vampires, Lestat and all of them, what's her name,
Anne Rice?
Yeah, you know that she wrote some other books with a different name.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, yeah. So that's what I'm saying. A lot of people, and then even Stephen King, he uses a pseudonym for his short stories. So people want to experiment with different genres or different types of writing or whatever your business, your niche is. You can, you know, change it up if you don't want to put yourself out there. There's all types of things that you can do social media wise where, you know, you can turn yourself into whatever, whoever you want to be.
And I just think some people are afraid of that still, which is really too bad, because I think if we can get people out there doing what they're passionate about, I think the world will start to shift a little bit. And yes. Maybe I'm being too optimistic, but I like to think that when people are doing things that light them up, there are all of these effects that they don't even think about. Like, they're happier, so they're nicer to the people they encounter. They are more likely to do things that are healthy. And I think the effects can be really, really transformative, but you have to be confident enough to just put yourself out there and to do something that lights you up.
Well, another thing you can do too is to have accountability partners. So a lot of times, if someone is lacking confidence, maybe if they're going to be doing public speaking, they can join Toastmasters. If they're launching a business, they can have accountability partners. They can say, you know, this looks good, this doesn't look good. And that person is their motivator and gives them constructive criticism. So, you know, everybody needs to have at least two or three accountability partners. So that way you're not procrastinating. Mm-hmm. And then that way you can build up your confidence too, if that's an issue for you.
Yes. Yes. Accountability partners are, I mean, so powerful, not just in business, but, you know, for working out, for even silly things like going to bed half an hour earlier.
But, oh, I need one for that.
Oh God. Right. Me too. I need several hours earlier. I've been on this really bizarre sleep schedule lately. So I need major work in that department. But anyway, so you started doing your PR work how many years ago now?
Let me see. It started off with PR more than 15 years ago. Then I segued into marketing. And then I got back into PR about 8 months ago. And PR and marketing, it kind of works hand in hand. So it's not something that was like, oh my gosh, I'm jumping into something I was not familiar with, you know, but I have about, you know, more than 15 years worth of experience in PR and marketing.
And if someone is just starting a new business, let's say we've got, let's say we have a yoga teacher listening right now, new business, she's only been teaching for about 3 months. She wants to start getting some visibility in media, but doesn't know how to do it. Like, where is the first place that she should start?
Well, gosh, and you know, and yoga is such an, you know, it's inundated with so many types of yoga and all these sort of things. But I've noticed that some yoga places in California, they sponsor like food drives or a local yoga day. And then I think they were working in conjunction with some people that sell yoga wear in the area. That's a good way, especially if you're doing something in the community where you're, you know, donating some of the proceeds to whatever charity. You know, some news outlets will pick that up. Or, you know, if you have an unusual story to, you know, how you got into yoga, like what's the story I've seen on the woman that's the oldest yoga teacher up in New York. She's always getting written up because she's like 98 years old and they show her doing all her stuff and she's beautiful inside and out. She says, oh yeah, I've had two hip surgeries. It's not going to stop me. So they always like her because she's the oldest yoga teacher in the United States. So you have to find a niche we talked about. So if you are, let's say you're a disabled person, a woman or a man, and you're doing yoga. Where's this gentleman that I saw on his Facebook? He's a morbidly obese man, but they show him doing yoga, I think a year or two ago, and his yoga teacher was the only one that would do yoga with him. She believed in him. So now he chronicles how he's been losing weight. And guess what? He's taking pictures and videos at the woman's yoga studio. So as a result, there have been interviews that they've done on her, you know, how, you know, why would you, you know, work with this obese man? And she says, well, you know, yoga means union. It means union of your mind, body, and spirit. She says, who am I to tell him no? So now you know how much business she has now, just because she was being kind and compassionate. So, like I said, it goes back to niche, something that differentiates you in the workplace, especially for yoga. Sometimes I think within the yoga industry, it's become too commercialized, and it's kind of gone away from the original meaning of yoga, the way it was done in India. So I think if you can keep to some of the old ways of really helping people, but put a modern twist on it, that's a good niche, because unfortunately I found you can't really find that many people that are really into traditional yoga. It's not about having all the, you know, hitting all these poses you see on Pinterest, and these people are hitting all these poses, and that's not really what yoga is about, you know?
Yeah. I completely agree there. And on the other end of the spectrum, we have yoga teachers who are like, nope, you should never charge money for yoga, because yoga should be shared. And I agree, yoga should be shared. But there's an issue that I think happens when you don't believe in charging money for yoga, but you want it to be your career.
Well, see, and that's where it goes into donations, because, and that kind of goes into the training. You know, I really do think idealistically, you do not want people that have to pay to get some spiritual enlightenment. Mm-hmm. If you're doing this as your career, if you don't want to charge, I would say, why don't you have donations? Because I think when things are free, people don't respect it as much. And I think when you're investing, like, in setting up your business, you know, I think you should get, you know, compensated. But I also know that, you know, for people, most people that are teaching yoga or meditation or whatever, obviously it's sacred to them.
Yeah.
So, you know, do donations. And then you can also sell products that deal with yoga. If you don't want to charge for yoga itself, then have some yoga mats, some yoga blocks, some massage lotions. You can even have meditation CDs. You can have these on display in your studio and other, and, you know, maybe charge for like retreats, you know, once or twice a year. So there's a way to find that balance. I do think when people are charging so much, it is ridiculous because mm-hmm. it is dealing with people's spiritual development. However, I do think there is value in people investing in their spiritual practice. So, you know, you have to find that delicate balance. Me personally, I don't even market Agnihotra meditation. I just simply say, hey, I do this once every 2 weeks. Sometimes I do it in a public park. And if people want to donate, that's fine. But, you know, they don't have to, because sometimes people have money problems. But I found that I've gotten immense benefit just from having a complimentary yoga session. I mean, meditation, meant to say.
No, I agree. And I think a lot of times when people just get something for free, they can find value in it. But I think as the service provider, it can be draining if you have to make ends meet and you're doing this for free. So I think the donation can be a really good balance there, because you're not charging more than what people can afford. You know, people can only pay you $3 or $4, then that's what they pay you. And I think it also helps you serve in a way that you're more present, because you're not freaking out like, oh my God, am I going to waste an hour? I should be making some money right now. And I think when money isn't the single biggest concern, people who are providing services are more likely to be fully present in the service, instead of worrying about, oh, I've got my credit card payment, I got to go to the grocery store, we need to get new shoes for my daughter so she can go to school. There's a lot of things that we don't realize will come in and affect our practice and the way that we are teaching others. And I think even if it's just, you know, a few bucks a person, it can go a long way to changing your delivery of the service.
Yes, that's true. It's interesting, because I had a yoga teacher, she moved out of the area, but she was actually a psychotherapist that actually used yoga to treat family issues and adolescent issues and things like that. She charged $5 for yoga, and she always had a full class. And as a result, when people, if someone needed to see a therapist, guess what? They would see her mm-hmm. because she would incorporate the yoga. And she did yoga nidra, which is a Himalayan type of yoga from that tradition. And so they were getting really good therapy that was based upon this, you know, this spiritual system. And she said she had always the best type of clients, and she kept her business focused on the things that were important to her. And she always had a busy class. And she says, yeah, I don't want to charge more than $5, because you're coming here 2 or 3 times a week. I'd rather you come here more than less, because it's too expensive. And then I believe her therapy sessions, they were only like maybe $60 an hour, which I'm not sure what's the going rate for, you know, therapy, but, you know, heck, that's great. I never went to her for therapy, but the people that I knew that went to her said, oh, I love it, because she starts off with the meditation, we do a little yoga, and then we sit down and talk. So that was able to feed her business, and mm-hmm. she was able to do that as her full-time business, you know, so that's wonderful.
Yeah, and it sounds like she was also using the yoga not just as, oh, I'm just doing this as a hobby, and it's not just a marketing thing, but she's actually doing it to help people.
Yes.
They can get some transformation there, even if they choose not to work with her as a therapist later on.
Yes. Yes.
All right, so I'm looking at the time here, and I have a few questions for you before we start to wrap up. So number one, do you listen to podcasts right now?
I do listen to a few podcasts, yes.
Do you have a favorite?
Oh, I don't really have a favorite. I listen to Tim Ferriss's podcast on business, because even though I don't agree with everything he says, he's always funny, and he has different types of guests on there. So I would say I listen to his the most. And I'm trying to think who else podcasts. And then Joe Polish, he has podcasts too, part of the Genius Network that he runs, and he hangs out with.
You thinking of the I Love Marketing podcast or one of his?
Love Marketing. Yes. So yeah, he's always cool. He's actually a friend of mine, so I like to keep up with him doing all of that. So those are the two business ones that I listen to. Other than not necessarily, they're not podcasts, but I look at a lot of Greg Braden videos, because he just resonates with me the most. He doesn't have a podcast, I don't think, but I'm always listening to his his messages.
Awesome. And is there a book that you're currently reading?
Oh my goodness. I read about 4 or 5 in any given time. Let me see. The book that I'm reading now, let me see what I have on my book. Oh, my list here. So actually, I'm working on a screenplay. So I'm actually reading Sid Field's screenplay, The Foundations of Screenplay Writing. So of course, nobody can see this, but I'm holding it up so you can see it. So that's what I'm reading right now. And then I'm also reading, let me see here, because I kind of like rotate. And then I'm also reading a book called The 12 Powers of Man by Charles Fillmore, one of the co-founders of Unity Church, because I go to a Unity Spiritual Center. So those are my two books. So they're very different books.
They are. I love that.
But I'm kind of like, I have 4 or 5 books and I rotate through them. So those are the two books that I'm reading right now.
Yeah, I do the same thing. I think I have maybe 6 books in progress right now, and they are all like very different books. But
yes,
you got to keep it interesting, right?
Oh, yeah.
And last but not least, do you have any tips for someone who is new to business that wants to be more profitable but doesn't want to sell their soul?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think that, that's a good question. I think the main thing is that do not base anything just on making money. Even if it's something that won't make you a lot of money, figure out how to niche it, which is what we've been talking about this entire time, how to niche it so that way you can stand out in the marketplace. Even if it's a very slim marketplace for that niche, I'd rather you make that, you know, be the leader of that niche. That's the main thing. And in terms of how not to sell yourself, like I said, you know, you have to, you know, always give clients more than what is expected. Because if you just base it just, oh, okay, I'm just built with this, what I'm billing them for the hour for the product, then you just come across as not being sincere. I would never recommend just doing something just because it's the trendy thing to do, because trends change. So even if they say, oh, this is not really selling right now, why would you invent this, whatever it is that you invent? You still do what the passion is, and then you find a way to make it relevant to the modern marketplace. That's what I would say. But, you know, and even if you do sell your soul, you know, I've sold my soul before in the past. It's a learning experience. You can always buy your soul back.
So, I agree.
So that's okay if you sell your soul. Just come back to us and then you'll be all the better.
Very important to remember. If you do sell it, it's not gone forever. You've got power here. So, and I love what you're saying about over-delivering. I think that's really important and something that people don't necessarily want to do, because we keep hearing, well, I need to have boundaries. And so we put up these really rigid boundaries and we're like, well, I can't do more than that because that is going to be violating my boundaries. And I think personally, what works really well, at least in my business, is I tell people something to give them an expectation, knowing that I'm going to give them more than that.
Yes.
So my expectation for myself, I'm not necessarily sharing, because I want people to be pleasantly surprised when they get more than what they're paying for.
Yes, I say I like that. And I think that, you know, going back to, you know, people selling their soul, I mean, you know, at some point, if you're trying to have a business that really, when you're doing meaningful things, you want to be very mindful with everything that you say, everything you do for a client. And don't say you can do something if you can't do it. If you don't have the experience, don't say you can do it just so you can get the first sale. And I mean, heck, I got my first major client by telling them, listen, I don't have experience with an account. You may want to get someone else. I said, I have experience with this and I'm eager to do this. I said, but I can't serve you well. That person gave me a portion of that business because I told them the truth. So, you know, it's good to have boundaries. And like I said, if you do sell your soul, just, it can be bought back, even if you put it on eBay.
That is so fun. And on that note, where can people find more information about you?
You can go to my website, which is ddonespr.com. That's DeDoanesPR.com. And of course, if you Google me, like I'm sure you've done, I'm like on 20 pages of Google. I'm all over Twitter and Facebook and all that. So I won't even list all the things that I'm on, but you can always find me. And if you ever hire a publicist and you can't find anything on them on the internet, that means they're not a good publicist.
Yes, they should at least be able to get themselves out there, right?
Yes.
So this has been fabulous. Thank you so much for joining me. I think this has been one of the more interesting interviews that I've done to date. And we touched on meditation and business practices. And I think this is going to be a really interesting interview for people to listen to. So thank you so much for participating.
Well, thank you so much for having me.